The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. From Los Angeles, California, it's the Glenn Beck Program. We have an update on what the court decided yesterday, what they're still looking at to decide, and what it all means to you. Coming up in a second. Also, the latest from inside the Capitol on what is really going on with healthcare. It's not pretty. We'll tell you about that. And again, what it means to your life. There's some vital information that I think you need to know, as this does affect you and will affect you and your children for the rest of your life. We're going to begin with the Supreme Court. Also, we have Mark Levin on today and Brad Thor. We begin right now.
I will make a stand. I will raise my voice. I will hold your hand. Because we have won. I will beat my drum. I have made my choice. We will overcome. Because we are one.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Well, I'm going to start with some really good news. The Supreme Court made some monumental rulings yesterday and agreed to hear another that will decide whether religious freedom is still a core principle in the United States. But let's look at what they did do yesterday. The long-awaited showdown on religious freedom as it applies to Christian bakers, florists, photographers, owners of wedding venues and others who have been forced into participating in gay wedding ceremonies. We have a quick recap on this first ruling. There have been several of these incidences around the country, but the one that is going to be decided by the Supreme Court involves a case in Colorado. Now, in Colorado, the lower court ruled that Jack Phillips, he is the owner of a place called the Masterpiece Cake Shop, violated Colorado's public accommodations law. Now, the public accommodation law means that you can't refuse service to customers based on things like race or sex or marital status or sexual orientation. Here's why you should care about this story. Freedom of religion, the freedom to exercise the dictates of our own conscience, is at stake. You may have to participate in compelled speech. That's not good. You may have to participate in things that you have a deep feeling and a deep belief that it is wrong. We are talking about at the level of, if you're a pacifist and you're a Quaker, do you have to go and fight? Well, yes, you do, because it's for the country and we're all citizens. Well, but that goes against the dictates of my spirit, my conscience. You lose conscientious objector. You lose the right of your own conscience, and you are no longer in control. Now, let's look at the facts. Here are the things that we absolutely know. A gay couple, David Mullins and Charlie Craig, visited the Masterpiece Cake Shop in 2012 along with Craig's mother. They wanted to order a cake for their upcoming wedding reception. Now, Mullins and Craig planned to marry in Massachusetts, where same-sex marriages were legal at the time, and then hold the reception in Colorado. But Phillips said, "I'm sorry, my religious beliefs, I can't make your wedding cake for a same-sex marriage." He said, "There are other bakeries that will be happy to accommodate you. I just have these religious feelings that I cannot move past." Now, here's something important in the fact category. Gay marriage was still prohibited by Colorado law in 2012, meaning that the Colorado Civil Rights Commission determined that Phillips' action violated state law, even though gay marriage violated Colorado state law at the time. So they're both apparently breaking the law. Even so, the ruling was upheld in Colorado state courts. Now, those are the facts of the case. The contested facts are Jack Phillips is a bigot. We don't know. He's a homophobe. We don't know. He's violating the rights of the gay couple because he's a religious zealot. Well, when did religiosity become something that you had to shed? He believes his religious sensibilities and his conviction are being violated. He believes it is against his religion to participate in their ceremony, and that is a clear violation of the First Amendment. Now, here's what I believe. This is what this story means to me, what you should take away. If this were the other way around, if a gay baker were being asked by a Christian couple to make a wedding cake that said, marriage can only be between a man and a woman, there is no way the state of Colorado would be forcing the gay baker to make that cake. No way. If the baker were Muslim, try to imagine the scenario where the court would be forcing him to deny the tenets of Islam. But because Christianity is our major religion, it seems as though it is perfectly acceptable to limit, discriminate against, and totally disregard the convictions of those who practice it. Why? Because Christians have been the oppressor. Forget about the oppression that is happening in Islamic states. We are a bigger oppressor as Christians. Now, how can you possibly violate the First Amendment by forcing the baker to participate in something that is a violation of his religious convictions? This is a slam dunk in a sane world. The Supreme Court needs to rule in favor of the First Amendment and every American citizen's right to free expression of religion. Now, if it's a sham, that's something different. And that's why we didn't accept conscientious objectors from everybody. You had to show that that is what your faith taught you, and you were a good member of your faith. If this is still America, there is no other way to rule. And the court will rule on this soon. Yesterday, the court did make four decisions. Some of them good, others not so much. But there's good news here. In religious liberty, the Supreme Court made a ruling yesterday that flies in the face of the non-existent separation of church and state. This is a big win for people of faith. Until now, Christian-based abstinence organizations have been denied funding, and pro-life organizations have been denied participation in governmental programs, while at the same time, an abortion bill or mill like Planned Parenthood will receive $500 million a year in government spending. Until now. Yesterday, the Supreme Court ruled 7-2 that the government cannot exclude churches and other faith-based organizations from secular government programs simply because they have a religious identity. 7-2. This is a huge surprise because it means that reliable progressive judges, Elena Kagan, Stephen Breyer, both joined Kennedy, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and our new judge, Neil Gorsuch, and they joined them on the side of the religious organizations. The case involved the state of Missouri denying a church a partial reimbursement grant for rubberized playground surface material made from recycled tires. And the reason why they rejected it is because the church runs the preschool, even though the only purpose of the grant program is to improve children's safety. It sounds like no big deal, but it is actually a very big deal. Thanks to that playground, Christian organizations can no longer be discriminated against. It is a step towards restoring sanity and the constitutional principles. Now, me personally, I have a problem with a tax-exempt organization getting tax dollars. But I would say that about any organization not just churches. This is, however, in my mind, overruled, because it means that if you're Christian, you can get the same services as everyone else. The court has taken a step towards ensuring that you and your children will be allowed to continue to exercise your faith the way you see fit, and you are not excluded from the rest of society. This is a rare victory for not Christians, but the Constitution, and strengthens a core American principle. There was another case involving the same-sex couple. Two female couples petitioned the Supreme Court to review their case, which fought the Arkansas Department of Health Insurance birth certificates bearing only the birth mother's name and not the female spouse. It would have said birth mother and then, you know, the spouse of the father. This is something that is always done, even if the father isn't the father. It's done for other groups. It's just being held back, not allowing to have a female spouse. They ruled yesterday and adhered to a provision of the Arkansas law, which was rejected by a trial court, kept in place by the Arkansas Supreme Court. The High Court reversed and remanded the Arkansas High Court's judgment. They found that until now, opposite-sex couples were being treated differently than same-sex couples in similar situations. Now, here's what's interesting about this. Neil Gorsuch issued a blistering dissent from the Supreme Court's decision that Justice Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito both joined. So it appears as though Gorsuch is ruling in the way he was advertised to rule, conservatively. We wondered if he would do this with social issues. He certainly did on this one. Gay rights, an issue that has absolutely been now resolved in America. The battle is over. According to the courts, and in large part the mindset of the American people, gay couples have all of the same benefits and the same rights as opposite sex partners. There is no longer any differentiation. Your children are growing up in a world now where it is possible, if not likely, that parts of the Bible could be considered hate speech soon. Now, gun rights. Strangely, the court refused to hear an important California case, whether the Second Amendment gives people the right to carry handguns outside of their home for self-defense, including concealed carry when open carry is forbidden by state law. Clarence Thomas, again, Neil Gorsuch, dissented from the court's decision not to hear the case. Thomas wrote in part, quote, "For those who work in the marbled halls, guarded constantly by a vigilant and dedicated police force, the guarantees of the Second Amendment might seem antiquated and superfluous, but the framers made a clear choice. They reserved to all Americans the right to bear arms for self-defense. I do not think that we should stand idly by while a state denies its citizen that same right, particularly when their very lives may depend on it," end quote. If you've been holding your collective breath on Neil Gorsuch, wondering if he's going to turn out like Thomas or Scalia, or he'd be co-opted by the leftist on the bench and wind up like Souter and Kennedy, the early results, but we have some interesting facts about this later on in the broadcast, the early results show that Gorsuch is everything as advertised. This is encouraging news from him. He seems to be the justice that everybody hoped he would be. But because the court as a whole refused to hear the Second Amendment case, and I think this one is critical, not only did they squander the opportunity to strengthen the Second Amendment, but for now, gun owners in California are mostly unable to obtain a permit to carry a gun. So they have no protection, and California is more and more dangerous in the cities. The right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed is still not understood by many in the United States. For whatever reason, court failed to act on behalf of the Constitution. Finally, the travel ban. President Trump's travel ban was surprisingly mostly allowed by the court. It's not entirely allowed. It's just mostly allowed. Maybe we can get Miracle Max to take it all the way home. They will give a full issue a full hearing later in the fall. The Supreme Court, however, yesterday removed the injunction issued by lower courts on refugees without a close tie to the United States, meaning that for the vast majority of refugees, the ban is now being upheld in the interest of national security. It seems like Donald Trump at this point is just asking for time to figure out what's going on. And, you know, it's not hard to figure this one out. You know, I believe there are extremists out there that want to create chaos and kill innocent Americans. And by allowing our government and this administration time to decide how best to secure our nation in a time where it's very difficult to discern who the good guys are and who the bad guys are, Americans, many of them, are somewhat relieved by this ruling. None of us want to see what's happening over in Europe, but again, none of us also want to see a repeat of anything like the Japanese internment camps. This is not a permanent situation, and none of us want our children and our wives, our husbands, placed in undue peril. We don't have to accept everyone in our country at once, and we do have an obligation to be discerning about who we allow in. And so far, the court is siding with Donald Trump. Now this, our sponsor. We're going into the Senate here in just a second, and I have some really incredible news on that. It's not exactly positive, but we also have Mark Levin coming up and Brad Thor. So there it is, your dream house. The house you and your spouse have imagined your whole life. Now you just have to go past the mortgage process. Easier said than done, right? If you're ready to buy, you're ready to refinance, you need consultants that are dedicated to helping you make smart mortgage decisions that that align with your unique financial goals. They have salary-based mortgage consultants. They work for you. They don't work for the bank. American Financing will get that straightforward and effortless mortgage experience and give it to you. American Financing, now doing reverse mortgages as well. Reverse mortgages can be a good way to increase monthly cash flow with no mortgage payment while still retaining ownership of your home for years. So call their number, 800-906-2440. That's 800-906-2440. Or online at AmericanFinancing.net. That's AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.com.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
The Glenn Beck Program.
I will beat my drum. I have made my choice. We will overcome. Cause we have won.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So your house, does your house have to be paid?
There is a... There is a real problem happening in Washington, D.C., an amazing problem that we all knew, but now we have to decide who do we believe. I'm going to tell you exactly what is happening in Washington with the Supreme Court, and it's... disappointing at best. But I need to lay out...
With the Supreme Court or with the Senate?
I'm sorry, not Supreme Court.
With the Senate. Yeah.
It's extremely disappointing, not surprising. You're being lied to by the media and by the media on the right as well. They're telling you some things that are absolutely not true, and I believe this is a setup to try to, and I shouldn't say that, this could be a setup to try to blame this whole thing on conservative Republicans and finally have a progressive bill that does bring you single-payer health care. I'm going to show you why this matters to you and what this actually means to your life. And we'll give that to you coming up in a second. Welcome to it. The Mercury Studios in Los Angeles, California. Hello and welcome. I'm so glad that you have tuned in today. Now, there's a few things that I want to talk to you about on the Senate. First of all, the CBO scoring came out, and it's not good news for the Republicans. So let's look at what the CBO said. Now, remember, the CBO is always low. They've never come out and said, oh, my gosh. This is going to be so expensive, and it turns out that it's cheap. It is always low. I don't know how they do it, but they have a perfect record of underestimating the cost of everything. So, here's what they came out and said yesterday. Stu.
It's interesting. The big takeaway from pretty much everybody is 24 million people will be uninsured because of this plan. Rachel Maddow tweeted that 24 million people losing insurance is roughly equivalent to the population of 15 particular states. This is a big deal. It's the only thing being reported from the CBO report.
It will also reduce the number of people on Medicaid by 15 million
right.
by 2026.
That's part of the total 24 million.
Right. And again, that's not going to happen because they're not, that's not being enacted until like 2024, 2025. This is they'll never get there.
First of all, obviously, five Congresses from now, we cannot count on them to maintain these cuts to Medicaid. Part of the cuts to Medicaid come with an offset of increased payments from the exchanges, which is what we typically refer to as Obamacare. A lot of these are just partisan lies by people who want to defeat the bill or the people who want to praise the bill. What is the 24 million number? The important part about that everybody needs to know when you're talking to your friends today and they say, 24 million people are going to lose insurance. The most important part about that is the vast majority of those people are going to lose insurance because they are not going to have someone come into their home and rip their insurance policy up and take it away. They are going to choose not to sign up. These are people who are forced into signing up now because of the fee. They signing up only because of the fee. And when the fee goes away, the Obamacare individual mandate fee, they will choose not to purchase insurance anymore.
So that is
not the same as taking it from them.
Right. I want to really make sure that everybody understands. The individual mandate happened because if you don't have the mandate and you understand the free market system, insurance isn't insurance. If I can go and buy insurance, if I go to the doctor and he says, you have cancer, and I say, crap, I don't have any insurance. Don't worry, son. I'm your Uncle Sam. Sign up today. And even though you've just been diagnosed with cancer and have let your insurance lapse and haven't had it maybe even in your entire life, the American people are here to bail you out. Okay. All right. Well, that's not insurance. That's a guaranteed health program that everybody gets it. Now, the problem with that is you're still running a sham operation. And instead of saying we have a single payer system that everybody just pays extra tax and we all have insurance and we don't ever have to worry about signing up, what we're doing is we're taking the free market and telling it you cannot make a profit. You cannot. You must take all of these risks. And by the way, it's not that they just have to take you. They cannot raise anyone's rate because they've let their insurance elapse. That's what happens. If you let your insurance elapse, they know you're not a safe bet. You haven't been paying in the pool. And this is the idea of when we say we're all in this together, it means that all of us have to pay something in. So whether it's, you know, it's the widow's mite, whether it is $10 a month, but you've paid something in, you pay it in. But what's happening is all of the paperwork, all of the teams of attorneys, all of the teams of people to make sure that paperwork is in, is sucking up all of the money that should be used for health insurance. Now, let me tell you what's happened because of it. You were told that if you do this, you would get $2,500 decrease. Every family in America would save $2,500 at least in the first year alone. Instead, we have had a 140% increase in your premium. Why? Well, that makes you hate. Now think of this. Think of this as strategy. Who do you hate? I don't hear the people hating the government. I don't hear people hating the Democrats or the Republicans. I hear them hating who? The insurance companies. The insurance companies are getting rich. Okay. But they're being forced to do stuff, and a lot of them called this on themselves. So I don't have a lot of sympathy for them, but this system doesn't work. It is going to collapse. Well, I hate the insurance companies. And nobody is saying, well, it was the federal government that put unreasonable rules in that force these companies to do this, and it increases their cost of doing business. And so they're passing on all of that risk now to those who are paying for insurance. It's exactly what we said would happen. It's happening now. So here's what I think is happening. And we have some sources on background. And I will tell you that what you're hearing in the left media is an absolute lie. And what you're hearing for the most part in the right is an absolute lie. The mainstream media wants to destroy Donald Trump and the Republicans. The right media wants to protect Donald Trump and the GOP establishment. You're being asked to believe Mitch McConnell. Forget Donald Trump. You're being asked to believe Mitch McConnell over people like the guys that got in and, you know, the Mike Lees, the Ted Cruzes, the Rand Pauls, the people who have stood by their principles and never wavered. Those people are being blamed for this. Now, let me tell you what has happened. You're going to hear, and you're already hearing it from people like Hugh Hewitt, who I really like and respect. I like Hugh Hewitt. I don't have anything bad to say. But I know he's one of them that is on currently beating the drum, which is the Mitch McConnell lie. And that lie is that the parliamentarian has said, you cannot repeal Obamacare. You have to choose. And so the parliamentarian would not allow them to fully repeal Obamacare. There are two provisions that have to be repealed. What they did is they repealed the mandate, but they didn't repeal that anybody with pre-existing conditions or cancer, and they find it today, they don't have a pre-existing condition. See, when we hear pre-existing conditions, we think of people like my daughter, who has had cerebral palsy her whole life and is struggling, and trying to get her on insurance is crazy. What we're also talking about are those people who are irresponsible. Now, some can't afford it. Some are irresponsible that are like, I'm not paying for it. Why would I pay for insurance when I can just go get it when I'm really, really sick? I'm young, and then I'm in a car accident, and I don't have insurance because I don't need it. Nothing's going to happen to me. And all of a sudden, we're paying a $1 million bill. That that is the person that you need to concentrate on, because that person is directly influencing your 140% increase. So we're getting rid of the mandate that says to that 20-something, you have to have insurance. You have to have it. We're getting rid of that. But we're not getting rid of the insurance company. You have to pay for that person who didn't have insurance. And that you cannot raise the rates if they've let their if they've let their insurance policy lapse. Those are the two drivers that affect you. Those two things are the reason you've had 140% increase. Without those two, insurance rates will go down and you'll be able to afford your insurance again. With those two in and the mandate taken, your insurance rate is going to go up faster than it has under Obamacare. To me, this is that what they're doing is they're blaming the parliamentarian. I want you to understand that is an absolute 100% total lie. The leadership of the GOP under Mitch McConnell have lied to those senators who were part of the committee who were saying, look, we want to work this out. We want to work this out. But you have to get rid of those two things because that's the main driver. And the pain for America is the insurance cost, the premiums going up. If the premiums weren't going up, you wouldn't be having a problem with this. But the premiums are going up. And so you have to reduce the premiums. They said, okay. And they never did anything about it. And now they're running out the clock. And they're saying that the parliamentarian is the one who has stopped it. But I want you to understand, the parliamentarian was never asked. The parliamentarian has ruled you can take all of it or none of it. There is no reason to take half of it. For parliamentarian rules, it's either all or none. And the leadership and Mitch McConnell have lied to the members of Congress. Now, I don't know why, but it appears to me as though they're running out the clock because they want a progressive insurance program. They do want single-payer health care. They want control of this. And they don't mind squeezing you to get universal health care, because if they fix it now, it's going to be so painful by 18, they're going to have another plan to fix it. And this time they're not going to have to worry about those constitutionalists like Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and Mike Lee. They're not going to have to worry about those people because they've been long discredited. Do not believe the parliamentarian lie, because that's exactly what it is. I ask you to ask yourself, do you believe Mitch McConnell or do you believe Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, and those who are around them? Something is wrong here, and it is the usual suspects. Unfortunately, because we are so split and we are so many of us are feeling we need to protect the president because the press is lying, that we're not looking at the other hand, which is controlled by Mitch McConnell. Our sponsor this half hour is Casper Sleep. I'm out in Los Angeles and I'm staying at an Airbnb, and they have three pictures of Obama in the house. And so, I mean, it's I can barely sleep tossing and turning. I've had to turn the pictures the other way on the house. Actually, I did try that, and I'm not kidding you. They have glued them to the wall. So I also don't have my Casper. So between the three pictures of Obama and the the bad mattress, I'm not getting a lot of sleep out here. Casper is the mattress that I have at home, and it is a high-quality mattress at a more affordable price for you. It ships right to your door in a free small box, and if you don't love it, they pick it up. Now you have 100 nights, not the 15 minutes laying in the mattress store. In fact, there is no mattress store. That's an uncomfortable, weird thing to do, in my opinion. They ship it to your house. You sleep on it for 100 nights. If you don't love it, I don't mean like it. You don't have to explain. You just say, I don't like it. Pick it up. They pick it up after 100 nights, refund 100% of your money, no questions asked. This is the best night's sleep you will have. You know what I really love about Casper? No more dead arm. I love that. Casper, sleeping on the mattress is the best way to try it. Put it to the test in your house for 100 nights risk-free. Casper.com, use the promo code Beck and get $50 off the purchase of your mattress. It's Casper.com, promo code Beck. Casper.com, terms and conditions do apply.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Mark Levin has a new book out. It's on American exceptionalism and the American idea and the American spirit and how we have lost it to the progressives. And he's going to be on with us in just a few minutes. Also, the one, the only, the never even think about being controversial, Brad Thor, joins us today on the program. You don't want to miss that because it might be a little, what do we say when Bill O'Reilly's on? A little prickly. Might be a little prickly, but lots of fun. You don't want to miss that.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Well, three journalists have resigned from CNN after the publication of the Russia-related article that they did. Turned out to be inaccurate and not well-sourced. Shut up. Get out of here. Good news is that CNN is saying, I think we really probably should be better sourced than that. Let's see if anything changes now that they have dismissed three people. From CNN. I would like to see them fired, but maybe that's just me. Also, Chip and Joanna Gaines are in the news today. I love these guys. They have totally transformed Waco, Texas, and they are getting involved in the life of a paralyzed firefighter. A great story. Also, Brad Thor is going to be joining us here in just a second. And Mark Levin has a new book called Rediscovering Americanism and the Tyranny of Progressivism. He in his book, he outlines what the problems are, how it started long ago, this is not a new problem, and what we need to do about it. Mark Levin joins us right now.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
A top advisor in the Reagan administration, author of multiple bestsellers, chairman of the Landmark Legal Foundation, also the syndicated talk host and host of Levin TV. Mark Levin is with us now. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Glenn Beck, I'm great. How are you and the family?
I am really good, really good. Good. Mark, I want to get jump right into the
back. Can I just say real fast, I like what you like. I like HGTV, and I love the Gaines. They're terrific.
I do too. Yep. I think they remind me of what America is supposed to be,
right?
Like. Yeah, exactly. And it's good to see that people still believe in that. And quite honestly, it has replaced the news channels in my home.
And
with the kids, it's replaced the Disney Channel. I can't trust anything, but I can trust Chip and Joanna with my kids when I walk out of the room.
All right, you want to hear something funny? When I have to leave my dog for several hours, I keep the TV on HGTV.
I got to tell you, I don't know how HGTV is not the number one channel in all of cable.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, sorry about that.
I want to jump to the back of the book here, where you talk about the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, and you talk about how this was not set up to give people rights. This was set up to restrain the government from infringing on those rights. And that, you know, you make the point through the book that we need to stand up for our rights and our natural rights and stop the government from stealing those liberties. But it seems, Mark, that at every turn we try, but it just doesn't, they don't care.
First of all, people need to know what these rights are so they know what they're defending. And we always discuss them at a surface level. And they need to understand these go back since the beginning of mankind, thousands and thousands of years. This idea of progressivism is old-time tyranny. And what I try to explain to people is, you know, we talk about freedom, July 4th coming up. What does all that mean? And where did the founders of our country get these ideas from? They didn't invent them. And these philosophers didn't invent them. You know, we rely on people like, believe it or not, folks, Aristotle and Cicero and Locke and Montesquieu and Burke, and they're not taught. The other side relies on people like Marx and Hegel and Rousseau, and they are taught. And so you're not going to get, your children are not going to get what they need to get from our public schools or colleges or universities. They're going to get the opposite of it. Because one of the efforts of the progressive movement 100 years ago, and they've succeeded, is to take their ideology and make it in the classrooms and teach it in the classrooms. You know, John Dewey talks about this. Their positions are not going to be advanced unless they can control what people are thinking. And so even look at this Obamacare debate. Is there any discussion among the political class whatsoever about individual decision-making, about individual freedom to pick whatever the hell you want to pick and for somebody to sell you whatever the hell they want to sell you?
No.
I mean, when it comes to toasters and refrigerators and cars and so forth, we get to make those decisions. But when it comes to our own well-being and our own lifestyle, and I try to dig in, and Glenn, you're familiar with these things, I try to dig in and explain to people, cut through all the static, all the chatter that's going on TV and even some radio and so forth, and understand more deeply what's going on here. Well, we're going to get caught in the weeds and we'll never get out of the weeds.
Yeah.
So that's the purpose of the book.
So let's look, because I was so thrilled to see that you're really engaging in the fight on progressivism in a historic sense. And you talk about the early leaders of progressivism and where it came from and how it's working now. We're seeing this now play out, and we're seeing it play out in this Obamacare discussion. And, you know, they're lying. They're absolutely lying. And I mean the progressives like Mitch McConnell.
Exactly.
I don't know what game is being played. But this has nothing to do with the parliamentarian. And I don't know if they just are trying to sweep out any constitutionalists and discredit them. I don't know if they really do want a single-payer health system. I mean, but you can't trust the Republicans because the Republicans have, I mean, they were the guys who started the first progressive party.
That's right, Theodore Roosevelt. I mean, let's be honest. The Republican Party is a progressive party. The Democrat Party is a radical progressive party.
Yes.
But there's no constitutional party. And I don't want to hear about these little third parties that get about 12,000 votes. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the two major parties. And the problem we have here is that we are debating within their environment. It's never about whether the government should be involved in this. It's how much government should be involved in this. It's never about individual liberty, individual choice. It's always about collectivism. And what the left does, you hear Bernie Sanders do this now and Nancy Pelosi, thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people will die if we don't have Obamacare. Are you kidding me? I mean, Obamacare, what is it, 8 years old? So now all of a sudden hundreds of thousands of people will die if we don't have Obamacare? And the problem is the Republican Party's been conquered and much of society's been conquered. There's not a single department, a single agency, a single program, a single entitlement that's, forget about being eliminated, that's been curtailed. And why is that? It's because we are on this trajectory. So what I'm saying in this book is, all right, let's step back. Let's understand the genius of our founding. Let's understand what is meant by the Declaration of Independence. We all embrace it. Now, what do they mean by natural law and natural rights? On the other hand, this other side, these two forces that are constantly fighting each other, although our force is fighting less these days, what is all that about? That mix of authoritarianism and tyranny and state and all the rest of it. Where does that come from? And, you know, you ignore the academics and you ignore the intellectuals at your own peril, because in the end, they're the ones that decide our politics. And this is a battle over the future of America. It's a battle over humanity. And the centralization of decision-making in the hands of self-claimed masterminds who seek to impose their will and then dress it up as the general good and the general will and the benefit of the people, they are the modern-day tyrants. And they can call themselves progressives all they want, but they are what they are.
Is there a way, Mark, to reach, 60% of the nation and come together? And I'm not talking policies. I'm talking about principles of natural law. Do you believe that there are people on both sides that are problems and both sides that can share the same values that we can reunite on?
Here's the problem. I believe there's some people like that, but I don't think there's 60%. And I'll tell you why. One of the things the progressive philosophers and then their so-called thinkers, Herbert Crowley, Weil.
Explain Herbert Crowley. People need to know who he is.
To me, he was the worst of the worst. And he was born in 1868. He lived into the 1830s. He had an enormous influence on Theodore Roosevelt, among others. And his parents were, you know, radical leftists. And they intellectualized, in my view, totalitarianism. And he embraces Hegel and Rousseau and Marx in their own way, mostly Hegel, and so do the others. And it's this: in order to find the individual, to find their self-realization, that's what they call it. They have to surrender their personal free will. They have to surrender their individualism if they're to enjoy sort of a paradisiacal existence. So there's a collective, there's a community, and the more perfect this collective and community becomes, the more perfect the individual becomes. And you're less an individual, you're part of this magnificent society, and you can hear some Marxism in this too. And what this is the German idealism, it's called historicism. Marx changed it to material historicism, not to everybody's eyes to glaze over. So Crowley takes this and he quote-unquote Americanizes this. And so they have to attack the Declaration of Independence. They have to attack the notion of unalienable individual rights. They have to attack the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because they have to have conformity. Everybody has to be rowing in the same direction in order to get to this paradise. This paradise, which is nothing more than the personal agenda of these individuals, which they seek to impose on the country. This massive bureaucracy we have is an outgrowth of the progressive movement, and it exists for the purpose of getting around our constitutional system. Elections don't matter. They don't go away. It doesn't change the overall direction of the bureaucracy. They have given themselves tenure, union protection, civil service protection. They're not experts. They're not professionals. They're pushing an ideology, not all of them, but as a rule. And so whether we have an election or not, there they are, redistributing wealth, issuing regulations and fiats, issuing fines and penalties. Whether Congress says so or not, the president says so or not, or the American people want it or not, the will of the people is irrelevant. And yet, Glenn, they always dress it up, when you listen to guys like Bernie Sanders, as populism. They always dress it up as popular sovereignty. The people deserve and the people need, and I stand for the people. And yet it always involves centralized government. It always involves a government-oriented program. And so the point is that this war on our founding, this war on the Declaration, this war on the Constitution, separation of powers, is the greatest disaster to these people, because they need a centralized authority that imposes its will so we can get to, you know, the end of the rainbow. That's why you see the attacks on the Constitution and so forth. But what I put in the book are the exact quotes. These people smearing these principles, attacking the Declaration, attacking the Constitution. They call the individualism that you and I and our listeners believe in, they call old individualism. There's a new individualism where you surrender to the state. You and I talk about liberty. For liberty to you and me, that means this circle of liberty around us that Aristotle talked about and de Tocqueville talked about and Locke talked about, this circle of liberty that the government may not penetrate. And the extent to which the government is involved in our liberty and needs to intervene, it must not seek to do so to dominate us. And that's not what Obamacare is. That's not what all these other things that they've created on the left. It is intended to change us, to remake us. And the reason you get increased centralization and increased police state policies and tactics is because it goes against man's nature. It goes against history. All right, I've been rambling.
No. You, how long do I have you?
Let's see here.
Think about it into break. I'm going to come back.
10:30 maybe?
Okay. Hang on for just a second. Let me take a quick break with Mark Levin, because I want to pick it up where he just left. I have a couple of questions on how we can come together, because he's right. That is the problem. Now, how can we change that? Back in a second with Mark Levin. Let me tell you about Liberty Safe, our sponsor this half hour. Not only do they make great safes, but they make it really easy to own one, and they're all built here in America. LibertySafe.com. You can buy a Liberty Safe at a great price and receive 12 months interest-free payments with zero down and zero APR. They even offer Liberty Safe for as low as $15 a month. And the biggest problem with Liberty Safe, and this is honestly, this is from their testing. They do a survey after people have the safe. And the number one complaint on Liberty Safe is I should have got a bigger one. Because once you have a Liberty Safe, you'll realize how much stuff you have in your house that should be in a safe. And really, it's not about the safe. It's about what you have in the safe. There is no liberty without security. What do you put into your safe that provides you real liberty? LibertySafe.com, home of the best built safes on the planet. LibertySafe.com, do what I did, have one installed in your home now with 12 months interest-free payments or as low as $15 a month on approved credit. It is LibertySafe.com.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
We have Mark Levin on. He is the author of Rediscovering Americanism. It's his new book, friend of the program. One of the more brilliant people
and a friend of Glenn Beck.
Thank you very much, Mark. We have become good friends over the last year or so, and you know, we don't always agree on everything, but who does? And
right.
And we agree on far more than we disagree, I think.
That's right.
Mark, you said on your radio show about the Senate health care bill that the two parties have abandoned capitalism. It goes really to the point of your book. If we abandon our principles, we never get the country back that we remember as a kid, all the good parts without all the bad parts. The Republicans are abandoning all of that. So let's use your book, and how do we get people to understand that this is a really bad deal that Mitch McConnell has just given us, and we've got to stand up for our own individual right?
I think, first of all, we have to stop defining ourselves through the Republican Party or Washington or whatever.
It's
a cesspool.
Yes.
We have to get back to our own souls and our own hearts and our own belief systems. And it's going to take the citizenry to do that. And you know, I include a letter in this book from Thomas Jefferson to John Adams, in which he looks back at Rome and he basically says, Cicero, Brutus, Cato, none of them could save Rome because the people lost their virtue. No system could be put in place to save them. What I'm saying is, we, the people, with our families, with our friends at the grassroots, we don't need to run everything by Mitch McConnell or the public school system or whatever. We can read, we can talk, we can have the discussions like the colonists did and so forth and so on at the dinner table at our restaurants and our churches and synagogues and so forth, but we can't have those discussions if we don't really know the nub of the matter. And that's what I'm trying to get at. I don't know if this will have any influence or not. If it affects 1,000 people, that's a good thing. I don't expect it to change history, Glenn. It's taken us over 100 years to get here. It's probably going to take us, if we can, over 100 years to get out of this. But I don't know.
Boy, I couldn't agree with you more. And it is the reason that I have kind of let my shoulders kind of go down a bit of taking on such a big fight. The fight has to be fought by the individual, and we all have to choose to be in the fight or not. Mark Levin, the name of the book is Rediscovering Americanism and the Tyranny of Progressivism. Mark, always good to have you. Please say hi to Julie for me, and good luck on everything you're working on.
And your beautiful wife, too. God bless.
God bless. Rediscovering Americanism, Mark Levin. Back in a second, Brad Thor, next hour.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
You know, guys, I'd like to kind of talk to you about what Mark was talking about. And can we go theoretical here for just a second? On his book, and he makes a really good case in his book of what we need to learn about progressivism and what the answers are. It is so good to see finally that progressivism is being known by its historic roots. I mean, if you remember on this program 10 years ago, we started talking about it and nobody cared about the historic roots. And we made the case for probably 2 years completely alone, saying, no, the historic roots must be understood by the mass, not just the intellectuals. And it is the disease, or the cancer that is eating the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. And as he points out in his new book, it was designed to be that, openly designed to be that. But have you guys seen his book yet? Have you seen the cover of his book?
Yeah, we have it. We had it here
a
moment ago. Yeah.
Okay. So, the cover of his book is, he is standing by an American flag, and I want to have an intellectual discussion here for a second and show you in action what I believe is happening in America. If you look at the cover of his book, it is perfect for the audience that he's trying to reach. He's trying to reach the conservatives. And so he is standing with, you know, full on. So, you know, it's Mark Levin, has his name in bold up above. So, you know exactly who it is. But forget that, you know, it's Mark Levin. Let's just say this is a book that is on the shelf and it's trying to reach everybody. So you put Joe Blow up there, and Joe Blow is on the cover. And so it's not Mark's book, and it's trying to appeal to everyone. What can you see in this book that is not just a turnoff, but confusing or made to look like poison to anyone on the left? And I don't mean the hard left. I mean just the liberal mindset. If you're just looking at visuals and you're looking at the title and everything else, you're looking at the whole cover, what's the problem?
The American flag?
The American flag is one. There's two that jump out at me.
The fact that it's a book. People don't like words.
Okay, so there's the American flag, and then the title, Rediscovering Americanism.
Mm-hmm.
We have these moral foundations, and in these moral foundations, there is care and harm. There is sanctity and degradation. And let me use that one as a prime example because it's so clear cut. With the left, there really is nothing sacred. And some people say that global warming is becoming a religion, but it's really not. They don't. Some do. But generally speaking, they don't look at the planet as sacred. If they did, they would not leave the trash behind when they have these big global warming festivals. They would not get onto their jet because the Earth is sacred and they really, truly believe that. So there is nothing that is sacred, and that's why you see degradation and so many shows and so many things that are produced by, you know, diehard progressive liberals. It can go to really horrible places, really dark, you know, and degrading places easy because there is no sanctity and degradation is left to go. There's no balance. What global warming is really all about is the idea that there is oppression. The main moral foundation of the left is care, not harm, but care and oppression. Now, the flip side of oppression is liberty. But they don't have both sides of that moral pillar. They only have oppression. They understand liberty to be the end of oppression. Well, who are they teaching and who have they been taught is the great oppressor? America. And more specifically, the white European Anglo-Saxon that came over that started America. And so we've raped the earth. We have stolen everyone else's history, everyone else's land. And we, as white men, and in particular, white, European, and mainly American men, are the oppressor. So when you see things, the reason why they don't cry, you know, when they see soldiers come back, generally speaking, I hate to make this all so general, but generally speaking, the reason why they don't look at the troops the same way is because it's an American troop and Americans are seen as the oppressor. So when they leave the garbage on the ground, it's not because the global warming has become a religion. It's because they're trying to stop the end of oppression. They are trying to make sure that America is stopped. That's why they don't. You don't hear them talking about China. China is by far the worst on the planet, and yet the smog is so bad. Everybody's wearing masks, and you can't see the skyline almost every day. And yet you have people like Al Gore saying China is ahead of us. No, they're not. It's about oppression. So here's a book on liberty, and it's a book that is specifically aimed towards our tribe. And so the book works, and the book works in its design. However, if you want to read, if you want any liberals to read that, it can't be designed to look like that, because they see the American flag, they see Americanism, and they assume Americanism is oppression, and the flag and Americanism to them screams fascistic. It screams that this is something that is a populist, nationalist kind of movement. We have to find a way to communicate, not in the instance here of Mark Levin, because what Mark Levin is doing is he's targeting another group. But when we want to target the left, we have to understand their sensibilities, and we have to understand what they believe. You're never going to change their minds on much of this. You're never going to be able to move them unless we speak their language. They don't understand liberty except through the lens of the end of oppression. And oppression is caused by the white male American. So now, how do we make the case for the Constitution and liberty as we know it when it was written by white male Americans who were also slave owners? They've set this up and built this perfectly. And I'm writing a book that may come out maybe in the fall, probably next year. And it is about an event that happened in 1959 that nobody knows about and is as important as the progressive movement. And it's something that nobody's ever discussed. We found this and we're like, wait a minute, what? This can't be true. And it's brought us to this point. And it is the literal documented design to destroy white male Americanism. And if they can just make those three things the oppressor, they win with half the country. So how do we get into that head that has had such a great foundation laid against us? How do we use their own language? How do we piggyback on their own language to get in, to be able to make a point that perhaps that is not the full story? Perhaps there is oppression in some cases and real freedom and the setting of people free in other cases. Any ideas? Any thoughts? Is this, did I make any sense at all?
Your point, you've made this point about your own books many times, I think, with going back to the old school Real America days where they put a flag behind you. If you remember, your book
and
has
a farm
and a barn behind you.
Right.
And they pushed really hard to get the flag on the barn.
Right. And the barn.
Right.
They were like, it's got to have a farm with corn and a barn and a flag on it.
And you, at the time, were in the wonderful farmland of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, which really, yeah. I think, you know, so much grain is produced there. But I mean, it's a true, I think, you know, it's a matter of who you're trying to reach.
Appeal to.
A lot of this you're talking about is from Jonathan Haidt's book. And it talks about this very specifically in that you hit a point of your intuition hits first. So people react to an intuition before they even bother with the reasoning behind it.
Yeah, they see the book. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They see Mark Levin. they see the flag, and they see Americanism, and they will not pick up the book.
Right.
A liberal will not pick this book up.
Your intuition hits first, and you say, no, I don't want to read that book. And then even if there's, your brain goes to work to justify that decision, that initial decision. So, like, it's that, and this is how I think, this is not just the left, this is the right as well.
Yeah, it's all of us.
It's all
human.
Of us. And it comes to the point of, you know, your brain essentially works as your own press secretary to justify your initial decision. Your brain works as the Sean Spicer or the Jay Carney to justify whatever decision you made initially. And so if your initial decision was, I don't like that book because I don't like Mark Levin, I don't like Glenn Beck, the American flag, oh, they're trying to jam patriotism down my mouth. It doesn't matter how good the arguments are inside, you're probably never going to come along unless you're really trying to consider and be, really being nuanced and careful in your thinking.
If you are a freak of human nature.
Yeah, right.
And I mean, we're talking about 3% of the population will go against their gut and the justification. It's almost impossible to do.
To the point of even the people who study this as academics,
yes,
show no better record than the average person in being able, yes, to accomplish it.
I've really been studying as much as I can human behavior and behavioral science, because that's what got us here, gang. What got us here was behavioral science, and we have to use behavioral science back, and nobody on the right even knows it. I mean, it's what we have to do if we're going to come back together. If you want to have a civil war, we can have a civil war. I don't want to be involved in it. I don't want to pitch for it. I don't want to have anything to do with it, because civil war is usually a lot of people dead, and it's rare that they work out well. Revolutions never work out well. Ours was the only one. They just don't work out well. The best thing we can do is find a way to come together. And it would be interesting to see Mark Levin's book repackaged and rewritten by him using behavioral studies to be able to reposition it and change its language to see if you could make the case for the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. They just don't see them anymore. It's like speaking a foreign language to them. We have to break that code. Our sponsor this half hour is My Patriot Supply. Last week, high-level talks between the U.S. and Chinese officials over North Korea. Both sides reaffirmed that their goal is the complete, verifiable, and irreversible denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. The president of China and America expected to meet again in Hamburg during the G20 summit next month. But we are on the edge, and so far we have lucked out. I mean, actually, we haven't lucked out. So far, we have been so blessed with divine providence that this whole thing has not come apart. We add the stress of real war or the stress of real economic trouble, not just this long, dragged out, I haven't had a raise since 2000, which is bad enough. I mean, banks closing. And I don't know who we turn into. There's one thing to hope that everything is going to be all right and your family's going to be taken care of. There's another thing to have confidence. Preparation transforms hope into confidence. I know my family is going to be all right, and that I've done everything that I can, because I started to prepare with preparewithglenn.com. That's My Patriot Supply's website, where you can right now get less than $1 per serving, 102 servings of survival food, breakfast, lunch, and dinner at My Patriot Supply for less than $1 per serving. Go to preparewithglenn.com, preparewithglenn.com, and have confidence that your family is going to be okay. You can also call them on the phone right now, 800-200-7163, 800-200-7163, or preparewithglenn.com.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. Welcome to it. The one, the only, this time we really mean it. Brad Thor is joining us next. You don't want to miss this interview with Brad Thor next.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Yesterday, we had such a fascinating interview with Brad Thor. Usually people, when they have a chance to be on a national radio program, they just take it lightly. But Brad was here. He was here early. He was here often. He was ready to go. And I appreciate that. I felt a little guilty because I read half of his book and then lost it. So I wasn't able to finish the entire book. But, you know, that wasn't just a turnabout is fair play between friends. No. I wanted to have him back on a second time to talk about his new book, which is absolutely fantastic. Brad Thor has 11.5 million books in print. He is now known as America's favorite author. He is a very good friend, and his latest book is called Use of Force. And I believe the ending could suck, but the half that I read is tremendous, and I believe it is his best book yet. Use of Force. Good friend, never controversial, Brad Thor begins right now.
I will make a stand. I will raise my voice. I will hold your hand. Cause we have won. I will beat my drum. I have made my choice. We will overcome. Cause we are one.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Program.
Welcome to the program, Mr. Brad Thor.
Hello, Glenn.
How are you?
How are you, Brad? My friend?
Good. How are you?
I am excellent, and thank you for your praise of this book. You know, the entire time I was writing it with my Navy SEAL protagonist who's working for the CIA, yes. I just said, you know what? What might Pat do in this situation? You know, right. or Stu or Jeffy, you know, dropped right. in a dangerous right. foreign country. Right. What might they do? And mm-hmm. they were really my North Star, my lodestar, if
right.
you will.
Yep. It was to
welcome.
Point you.
It's understandable.
If I know. Because I read mm-hmm. the book. It was to point you in the direction of don't go there, right?
right. It was kind of the George Costanza thriller
right.
this year. Just go the opposite
right.
direction.
Right,
opposite
right.
Direction.
Okay. Yeah. Brad, I want to talk to you about a lot of things. How much time do we have? Do we have quite a bit of time? Or are you just
time as you need? No, I'm
okay,
let's go.
I didn't
what
know
everybody
because
else can wait.
We had such
I
a good
do this.
We had such a good conversation yesterday, and it happens to people. I know it happens to people all the time where, you know, they're on Jimmy Kimmel or something, and Jimmy will just stall and stall and stall, and then the guest walks out halfway through and is like, "Oh, sorry, I forgot." You know, so
Damon, sorry, thanks for coming on, Matt. Yeah, we have today.
Okay, so Brad, reading
back,
the book, what'd you say?
No, that's what Jimmy says to Matt when he cheats yep. him out of time. He's like, but we'll have you back.
So. Yeah, we'll have you back. Brad, in reading the book, there's a couple of things that I'd like to talk about and not really give away the plot of the book because everybody has to discover it themselves. But you are talking at the beginning about the way these, I guess what you can call refugee ships are being packaged over in the Middle East, who's packaging them and how they're doing it. And it is obscene. I have, I have not yet, and you would think with liberals, you would see these kinds of reports. I have not seen reporting like this at all. Is that really the way it happens?
It is. And I have to tell you, there is a lovely, lovely reporter at the Daily Beast. I give her a big shout out, two big shout outs, actually, in the acknowledgments of this book. That is the Rome bureau chief for the Daily Beast. And I reached out to her, befriended her in social media, and she was incredibly helpful because I was reading her articles about the refugees, the connection with the mafia and ISIS. And it, you're the one that coined the term faction, Glenn. And what I do is faction, where you don't know where the facts end and the fiction begins. But the refugee crisis and how ISIS is using it and how the mafia is even involved and how they're smuggling weapons into Europe for terrorist attacks is amazing. But this person, Barbie, at the Daily Beast in Rome, couldn't have been nicer. She really was terrific.
And she has to be brave, really brave.
Oh, yeah.
Explain a little, without giving any of this away, because it's so great the way you lay it out, but explain what's happening with the refugees.
So in my thriller, the way it kicks off is in real life, we discovered a laptop in a terrorist safe house. And when they opened it up, it looked like it had just come from Best Buy, never been used. But when they drilled down, they found in real life all of these chilling plots, things they had planned for Dallas and New York and Rome and Paris and London. And the CIA never caught the guy. And so I had been reading Barbie stuff on the Daily Beast about the refugee crisis. I'm concerned ISIS has threatened to sneak people into Europe, terrorists, in via the refugee crisis on these boats. And I started reading about it and looking, and these smugglers are bad. I mean, they are putting people, people are suffocating in the holds of these fishing boats that are not seaworthy. It's bad. No fuel to get all the way.
It is worse than the slave trade ever was.
Yes. They are torturing and raping people. They are splitting families up and deciding you get to go to Europe, but we're going to keep your daughter and your wife here. There are people that have never captained a boat before, and they're putting a Kalashnikov to guys' heads saying, okay, you who paid us your life savings to go to Europe, you're going to pilot this boat. And they give them enough fuel to just get outside the territorial waters of Libya, and then they hand them they've given them a satellite phone with one phone number pre-programmed into it, and that is the Italian Coast Guard. And these boats are sinking, and thousands of people are dying. I mean, it is a humanitarian crisis. I mean, it is beyond barbaric, beyond horrific what is going on, and I just thought, this to me was fascinating, and if I can, through my thriller, bring a little light to this and how evil these smugglers are and how well-connected they are with ISIS and the mafia, I might be doing some good with it.
So why are they putting these boats out that are just not seaworthy, not giving them enough fuel? Is it just to cause massive chaos on the seas so the boats and the refugees that are working with them get in?
Well, that is a big part of it. So it's Libya, right? So they don't have like a great shipbuilding infrastructure there, and they're taking boats that even these poor fishermen won't use to go out and fish on anymore, and they're filling them full of as many people as they can, and they're just shoving them out. It is a money making operation. I mean, these guys are the scum of the earth. They are trading in human misery. The things that these people go through, and these refugees are trying to escape their countries to get a better life. We can argue about what the best way is to do it, but you've got these people the women. If a woman is pregnant or menstruating with some of these Muslim men, I mean, they have thrown women overboard.
Horrible.
I mean, bad stuff. Very, very bad.
So you go in, and I don't want to give the story away, but I want to take you to one place that I just thought was riveting, is when Scott comes in, the main character. What is this, the 17th book with him?
My 17th thriller, yeah. And you can read them in any order. If you haven't read a Brad Thor book, you can start with Use of Force. You don't need to have read anything of mine before.
So Scott is the main character, and he's going in to get a really bad guy, and he goes into a store. I don't even remember where it was. Is it Libya? Where was it? Where you went?
With the satellite phones. Yeah, that would be the way you would track a smuggler down. Is if you found a satellite phone, you'd want to know who sold it to whom, and you'd pick up the trail there.
Now, just explain the store scene. Is that from real life?
there's a lot of this that's real. So these smugglers all buy their satellite phones from the same company in the Emirates because they have the best coverage over the Mediterranean. So give them that piece of humanity that they actually want the satellite phone to work when the boat is sinking and these people are being fed upon by sharks. You know, you hope that the Italian Coast Guard, which is hours away, can find a way to rescue them. But so the scene with my guy, so a terrorist mastermind's body washes ashore in Italy. The CIA panics, and they send Scott Harvath, my protagonist, out to retrace this guy's steps to say, what was he up to, and are we going to see some mega attacks in the U.S. this summer? Go retrace his footsteps. And Harvath, knowing that these guys use the same satellite phone company, figures out who bought this satellite phone, and it tracks to a small electronic shop in Libya, which is based on a real little shop that was trafficking in these phones. And Harvath goes in to try to bribe this guy, give him cash first, and the guy won't take it. And in the middle of trying to convince this guy to give up the smuggler, Libya is overrun with different militia groups. I mean, they are a failed state. It is bad in Libya. Three militia members pull up outside to actually do a transaction with this guy. Now Harvath's stuck. He's got three militia guys coming in, and what's he going to do? And it devolves very quickly, as these scenes do, and that scene was actually based on something one of my former special operations guys told me about.
It was it's a pretty terrifying scene, the way the Americans take charge, and and then they take him out to get some information, and the technology that you describe is in some ways comforting, in other ways absolutely horrifying. And I want to get to that here in just a second with Brad Thor. The book is Use of Force. I want to talk to him about this. I want to talk to him about the assassination attempt in the ballpark a couple of weeks ago. Perhaps some of the cloak and dagger stuff that is happening now in Washington, D.C. We'll get to that in just a second when we come back. First, I want to tell you about Goldline. Do you remember the fall of 2007? Everybody thought we were going to have the longest cycle on record. People then were talking about Dow 21,000. And I was on the air saying, no, you might want to look at Dow 2100. It got down to 6,000. The world was wrong, and a few people were right. It came crashing down. Now, let's look now, the stock market. We're at 21,000. What does your gut say? 30? Or 10? I want you to read an exclusive report. You don't have to buy anything. I want you to read this report from President Reagan's budget director, David Stockman. He is identifying the five threats to the economy and the financial markets that he says are real and overwhelming. I've read this report. You need to have it. Being prepared, most of it is having the information in front of you so you can make the right call and prepare yourself. Call and get this free report at 866-465-3546. That's 866-GOLDLINE. They're extending their price protection program as well. For as little as $2,500, you will get 3 months of price protection, which means if the price of gold falls in the 3 months after you buy it, they will make up that price difference with more gold. So there's no way for you to lose. And that starts at $2,500. If you have $25,000 or any step in between, $25,000, you get a full year's worth of protection. No stock on earth will offer that. I want you to read their important risk information right now. Find out if buying gold or silver is right for you at 866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE, or goldline.com.
We are one.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK.
Welcome back with Brad Thor. Brad, explain the technology that you show in Use of Force. And I don't think this is going to surprise anyone, but it is the way your character uses it. Has it been used this way? What else is it used for? And explain it. Start there first.
Okay. Are you referring to the way that Harvath breaks the satellite phone salesman? All right, so this is real, and this has been used by somebody that I know. And essentially what he did was open up a laptop in front of the suspect. He wasn't going to drill him through the kneecaps or anything, but positioned a drone over this guy's house and did a split screen that showed the guy's wife and kids basically in the backyard, and then showed a screen that's got the underbelly of the drone with the weapons package so that he could say, all right, activate this Hellfire missile, if you will. And basically terrified this guy into, if you don't give up the really bad dude you're working with, then we're gonna kill your family. That was the threat, that we know where you live, we've got your wife and children in the crosshairs, and you better give us this bad guy that we want or there's going to be trouble.
So, I mean, the way you wrote it, I mean, that just doesn't sound, you know, that sounds amazing. But when you read it, and the way he didn't believe it at first, and then he went over, the drone flew over his house, flew over his store, and he saw right. that it had been burned to the ground, and he saw in real time, and then the drone starts to fly to the house, and he starts to sweat. And he then sees his wife and his child step out on the back patio. It's quite terrifying. How do you feel about that ethically?
Well, I'll tell you, the guy in question, and readers will get this, the guy in question is a really, really bad guy. And the main character that's doing this to him has no intention to harm his wife or children. It's a psychological ploy here. And that's what our men and women away doing some of the country's most dangerous business have to make calls and have to decide how to do things.
So hang on just a second. I don't have a problem if we are using that and we don't kill his family, but then how do you have any credibility? I mean, he has to die at that point. If he says no, he has to die because he'll go back and say, hey, they use this ploy on me. They'll never use it.
Right. It doesn't work. They don't follow through on it. They draw a line in the sand and I jumped right over it and there were no consequences.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I mean, you would have to, and that's the benefit I get as a fiction author, is that I get to ultimately choose how the guy's going to react to this. But again, it was from talking with someone who had done something similar and was able to assess that's what they do. They look at these people that they have to interrogate and decide what's going to work with them. That the more information you can have about a subject before you even sit down to talk to them, the better off you're going to be. And sometimes desperate times call for desperate measures. That's a big thing I talk about in the book. It's like, okay, we're a nation of laws, not a nation of men, and we put rules on our intelligence services and in our special operations community. And should they be allowed to cut corners? And, you know, how desperate do things have to be? Is it worth it for one American life? You and I talked about Benghazi. I don't care that they couldn't refuel jets. They should have been going supersonic with American jets from Italy over Benghazi, breaking every piece of glass in that town, and then run them till they run out of fuel and dump them in the Med, and we'll pick up the pilots. We can build more planes. So I'm a big believer, and I think that's the fun part of my books, is you read these and you're like, okay, not only does that make sense, but I really hope that's what we're doing out there with the bad guys.
So, Brad, we are looking at a much more dangerous world than we were when we first started talking. You and I were much more hypothetical, really, you know, when we started talking 10 years ago on what this world could be like. Your book is now absolutely these things are going on, and we are facing these kinds of threats. No doubt in my mind that what you talk about with the refugees, what you show happening in Paris in your book, is absolutely happening right now. Are you more optimistic or less optimistic than you were 5 or 10 years ago on the state of the Western world?
I'm actually more optimistic on how we're going to combat it. Okay, I actually think, and you know, I was not a Trump supporter. I worked on Rick Perry's campaign. My family and I pray for Donald Trump and the people around him on a daily basis that they are going to be successful, because we'll all be successful.
Yep.
I actually think that administration can take the big leaps and do the hard work that needs to be done. I, number one, think, you know, we hear, like, after the Orlando massacre that this guy was on the FBI's radar. There wasn't enough to get him, so they had to let him go. Our intelligence services in the Western world are drowning. We've got open ISIS cases in all 50 states in the U.S. It's happening in Brussels and in the Great Britain. There's just not enough intelligence officers and police officers to follow these guys. And I think we need to lower the prosecutorial bar. We have a zero tolerance policy when it comes to child porn. If you're surfing that stuff on the internet, you're going to jail. And I think we ought to identify the gateway drugs, the on-ramps for jihadism. I think we ought to make it a lot easier to prosecute these guys. And if somebody even sleeps on your couch and you know that they were planning an attack, you ought to go away not for years, but for decades. And if people okay. die in that attack, you ought to go away for your entire life. Let's raise the price.
I want to continue our conversation with Brad Thor. His new book is Use of Force. We're going to talk about what the Supreme Court did yesterday about bringing in refugees from other countries. We talk about that and so much more when we come back with Brad Thor.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
I honestly think that the best thinkers on the planet for geopolitical consequences and moves and counter moves are the guys who write what I call fiction that is driven by the facts of today. The people like Tom Clancy was when I was growing up. That's Brad Thor today. You know, the Russians actually thought he was a CIA plant. That the CIA was trying to get Russia to think that that's how the Americans will move because he was so accurate and spot on. Brad has been a good friend and advisor of mine for a while because the fiction writers, this is what they have to do, and they have to make sense. Real life doesn't have to make sense. Fiction has to make sense. So, Brad, with that, Let's war game a couple of things because I can't find a way out that I'm comfortable on a lot of these things. Let's start with North Korea. We have three carrier battle groups out now. The only time in history that that has ever happened where we've had three, we've always gone to war. We have Otto Warmbier being drugged and beaten now, according to one general that they used sodium pentothal on him so much, it addled his brain. They were beating him. They dumped him on our doorstep like a mob hit. And they're also putting into production long-range missiles, and we don't really seem to have a line because the crossing that line for us is all bad stuff. What do we do?
Well, I'll take it up another notch for you to add to your anxiety over North Korea.
Thank you.
A lot of people scoffed and laughed when they did their nuke tests, when they detonated underground and said, wow, these are relatively small, low-yield things. Ha, ha, ha. They can't really build a serious big bomb. Well, if you think they're going to put them on top of a missile, you may not be worried about, you know, this thing being equivalent to what the Russians have, but you know, the North Koreans have put a couple satellites into outer space, and if they put one of these low-yield bombs into a satellite and detonated it over the United States, the electromagnetic pulse is going to wipe us out. We're going to go back to the 1800s in the blink of an eye.
Jeez, I haven't even thought of the satellite. Thank you, Brad.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome. Sleep well tonight, Glenn. You know, Tanya,
jeez.
I'm sorry.
I know. I don't sleep as it is now. You give
as
me
it
that.
Is, I know.
Okay, so what do we do? What should we do?
So Kim Jong-un isn't the problem. It's the military and political structure that holds him up as a figurehead. The reason he's got that stupid haircut is it's supposed to harken back to the days of his grandfather.
Correct.
What's interesting for me is that they decided to assassinate his older half-brother in an airport where they put up those two dupes, those masseuses,
yes,
or whatever it was, and they killed the older half-brother, which is a really interesting move. I don't know why they did that, what they were worried about, what kind of chess pieces are being moved.
Weren't they sending a message to the West first sending a message to their own people, look at what the West has done, but also maybe sending a message to the people he's afraid of, that I'll get you wherever you are, and also a message to the West, I don't care if you have it on tape, I'm not afraid. Possibility?
Yeah, that's possible. Yeah, no, it's totally possible, and it's possible that they were worried there was some plot afoot to overthrow things and to use the older half-brother as somebody to install a new, more democratic regime there. I mean, it's hard to understand. They're nuts. They're absolutely nuts. And there isn't a good way out of this, particularly because you've got Seoul sitting on the other side of the DMZ. And Seoul, when you think about it, with 11 million people there, they are the Israel of that area. There's bunkers underneath everything because they're worried about incoming from the North Koreans. There is not a good way out of this. And it's another place, you know, you would have thought that we had Saddam Hussein's inner circle very well penetrated before we went into the Gulf War scenario, and we didn't. And we're even more blind when it comes to North Korea. We need to get inside. These guys all have skeletons in their closet, the generals okay. and the politicos behind them. We need to work it from the inside out.
Okay, so you are a I've got a gun to your head. I'm forcing you to put your house down on the betting table. You bet this ends in our favor, or it ends with war?
I think China goes in and does something. I think the Chinese are better equipped to overthrow that government, and they don't. But the problem for China is they don't want the mass of humanity running in. That's the big thing. South Korea and the Chinese want to contain it. But my money would be on actually some sort of a coup and China being the brains behind it. That'd be what I hope.
All right. Next scenario. I've got two scenarios left here. Next one, Russia, the election. We know, we've known forever that they were going to try to influence our election. They are looking for chaos. They weren't trying to get Trump in, although they didn't like Hillary Clinton. That was an extra bonus. What they're trying to do is cause chaos and have us lose faith in our own system and be able to manipulate. We are arguing about politics. We're not really facing the problem, and that is that Russia, Romney was right, Russia is our biggest geopolitical foe right now and is a direct threat to the United States. How does this one end?
Well, I'll tell you, I know what we should do, and it was Bill O'Reilly's idea. I don't think American credit card companies should be honoring any transactions inside Russia. That'd be devastating for them. Absolutely devastating. And if we can help drive down oil prices by flooding the market, that'll also hurt Putin. He's only got energy, but we
really are. I mean, you know, our fracking, it was too late to stop. The Saudis tried to stop us from fracking. It's already too late for that. And we are a big reason why the oil prices are as low. They are in deep trouble economically. Does that not make them more desperate?
It's going to make them more desperate, but I think that with the internet and the ability of good Russian people to see stories about liberty and freedom from around the world, I think we should be fomenting unrest in Russia. We should be doing everything we can. You know what? You're going to do it to us. It's like the whole Untouchables thing. They send one of yours to the hospital, you send two of theirs to the morgue. I think we ought to out-manipulate them, but do it with the truth. I think we should ignite the lamp of liberty in the hearts of the Russian people, because once those lamps are lit, there is no extinguishing it. And let's beat them with the truth, because there's a lot of bad things in Russia. And the more we can do to help expose it and get those people to rise up, the better it'll be for the rest of the world. Putin needs to go, and all of those sleazy, corrupt people around him.
Do we actually come to our senses as Republicans and Democrats and actually deal with the fact that they're already here and infiltrating and working on 2018 and 2020? Do you see us actually getting there, or just using all of these investigations to hurt one side or the other?
Listen, I know that there are good people on both sides of the aisle that are concerned about this, because the shoe can be on the other foot tomorrow. It can be a Republican today, a Democrat tomorrow that's being either helped or hurt by these efforts. This is an American issue, and that's the way we need to focus on it. And, you know, Trump is, it's the one issue he won't touch. He will not condemn the Russians to come right out and say, if this happens again, you know, this is going to be the consequence.
Why?
I don't know why he won't. I don't know. I think he felt a lot more comfortable in Saudi Arabia than he did at the NATO summit. I think he admires what he thinks are strong leaders, and dictators are not leaders. They're despots. They're tyrants. And for some reason, he feels an affinity with them. He likes tough guys. I think that's a mistake. I think real American leadership would be saying, you know what, you did some pretty bad stuff, and no, we're not going to ease sanctions on you. I mean, it's insane that Congress has got to do what's best for the country by blocking the loosening of sanctions, and the president's lobbying for that. That's insane. If I had written this in a book, I would have been tossed out of my editor's office.
Brad Thor is the author of a new book, Use of Force. If you've never read a Brad Thor book, start with this one, Use of Force. It's really, really good. 11.3 million copies of his books in print today, which is a staggering number. Brad, last scenario, the Middle East. We are now siding with the Syrian Kurds, who are Marxist revolutionaries and terrorists. We are using them as proxies to fight the Russians and the Iranians and the Syrians. It's going to come and bite us in the ass. Iran is now trying to sweep into a crescent to start their own caliphate. Turkey wants theirs. ISIS is kind of on the run, but they're more of a global operation now. And we seem to have our head in the sand still, although we are getting better. How does this one end?
Well, I think that the current administration has opened up good channels of communication with the Saudis. The Saudis hate the Iranians, and I think we need to continue to listen. This doesn't end well. I mean, this is a long, protracted, lukewarm war, if you will, where we're not necessarily firing the shots, but we're actively supporting people that are. So we're going to see a lot more of this proxy stuff. This does not end well. But the one thing, again, that I think the Trump administration can do is every time there's an act of Islamic terrorism somewhere in the West, I think we ought to wring another concession out of the Muslim world. So another drop of Western blood is spilled. We are merciless in having Trump hammer them publicly for this backwards ideology, and not only to condemn radical Islamism, but to say, okay, by the way, when are you guys going to start letting women vote in Saudi Arabia? And just to hammer that, to just bring unrelenting pressure for reform in the Muslim world, because until that point, we're going to be playing whack-a-mole with terrorists, and we really need Judaism's been reformed, Christianity's undergone a reformation, Islam has not, and it's long past due.
Brad, the Supreme Court ruled that the president can say, for the safety of Americans, we are not going to take these refugees until we've worked this out. Is there an honest effort to try to figure out a way to bring people into the country and have an idea of whether they're good or bad? You know, we've worked it out with Mercury One and the Nazarene Fund, but it would be politically incorrect to do that as a nation. How do you do it? Is there a way to do it?
Well, there's a couple of different ways. And one of the things is bad communication on part of the Trump administration. These six countries were identified by the Obama administration because they couldn't even tell you if people getting on planes had parking tickets or overdue library books. And we need to screen. I mean, you get on a plane in London, anywhere else in the world, your name is sent to the United States. They know before that plane takes off who's getting on the plane. And that's important. So that's not an anti-Muslim thing. You need that from any country in the world to know who's getting on these planes. That's number one. Number two, the refugees come through UN intake centers. They are like bad prison yards, okay? Mm-hmm. If you ID as a Christian when you check into these places, you're going to get killed. Or bad things are going to happen in these refugee camps, which is why Christians don't self-identify there. And I want everybody who is a good, honest person, be you Muslim, Christian, whatever, to have an opportunity to get to the U.S. I want you to be a productive citizen. But we need this idea, again, Bill O'Reilly, another great idea when he talked about setting up safe zones within Syria, within the Muslim world, so that we don't have to take people here, so that they can remain culturally where they are most comfortable, because they're running away from something. They're not running to the United States. They're running away from their own problems. And I think we need to keep them in that region where they're culturally adept. They understand the culture. If you want to come to America, that's a separate story. But if you're coming to America just because we've thrown open the doors and you're getting away from something, that's not exactly a tier one refugee that we want, if that makes sense. I'm not saying we shouldn't take people in times of war and in strife and things like that, but I want to make sure that we're making plenty of room for people who are, you know, standing in line and have devoted themselves fully to being here. But I look at the faces of those children, and you want to help those people as much as you can. I want anybody who wants to be a good American, I want them here, and I want to help them. But we need to vet people. We need to vet them. So I actually think Stu, Pat, Jeffy, I think all those guys, I think we ought to put them on the front lines and just, you know, sit down, have a Coke with these guys. Kind of have five bullet points.
No. And bring your vest. No. And bring your vest.
Brad,
it's a three-piece suit, please.
You know, Glenn, you've been carrying these guys for years. I think the show would be fine without them. Let them go do some good for the country.
Right.
Take Vinny Penn with you, the guy that claims he got you out of the mullet haircut. You know, I think there's some guys that could do some good work over
got
there.
Got me into the mullet
starting
haircut.
Starting with your show.
Brad, thank you so much. God bless you. The name of the book is Use of Force. Pick it up. Available today. Bookstores everywhere. Use of Force. Another thriller from America's favorite writer, Brad Thor. Sponsor of this half hour is Simply Safe. Most burglaries happen during the day when you're at work or getting lunch. Thief is breaking into your home. Don't spend any time during your workday worrying about somebody breaking into your home. In under an hour, you can install yourself Simply Safe. There's no wiring. It comes in a box. You open it up. You take out the base station. You turn it on, plug it in, and it says, step one, plug this one in. It's really, really easy to use. It's, in fact, simple. I've done it in 30 minutes, installed it. It is really simple and unbelievably economical. You're not paying what, you know, these other places pay to wire up your home. You do it. It's directly to you. You design it. They have systems, and you'll be able to figure this out. You're smart enough to do your own homework and figure this out. And then $14.99 gets you the coverage every single month, and there's no contract. So if you have it this month and maybe things are tight next month and you don't want to have the coverage, you don't have to have it. And you start again the month after that. $14.99, you control the round-the-clock security with what I think is the best security system out there. All wireless, high-definition cameras. It is Simply Safe. SimplySafeBeck.com. 10% discount now at SimplySafeBeck.com.
Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK.
Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome back to the program. So glad you're here. We're in Los Angeles. I would ask any members of our audience that pray, if you would just say a prayer for us today and keep us in your heart and in your prayers today, we could use some prayer coverage. We would appreciate it.
Absolutely. And a big show tomorrow, Glenn. Kind of out of the norm.
Yeah.
Tomorrow.
Very out of the norm. Did you read my Facebook post last night?
Of course.
About
obviously.
This?
Yeah, of course.
Obviously, yeah.
Obviously.
Okay. All right. Last night, I'd invite you to go look at the Facebook post that I posted last night about tomorrow's show. It is very out of the norm. I'm just going to be taking phone calls tomorrow. May start with a short monologue, but I really want to hear from you on a few questions, and they are all posted at Facebook, my facebook.com/Glenn Beck. Check it out now. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.